Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. This time, I'm introducing you to Dean Graves, who is so very passionate about philosophy, psychology, and exploring the human condition to help others find inner peace. He's written books, he conducts workshops, and he's created seminars that have helped numerous people worldwide. Dean is one of those people that was just going on with life and doing what he thought he was supposed to until right in the middle, around his 50th year, he began to meditate, and through that meditation, opened entire universes. And what he wants us to know is the true nature of humanity's purpose in creation. The story of his awakening is fascinating, and as I said, it began in the most unlikeliest of places. So here's my conversation with the really down-to-earth and interesting Dean Graves.
I had a spouse for a period of time, and she died after about 11 years that we were together. And after she died, I was very morose. And actually, 2 days after she died, and I was taking the garbage out, and I was coming back into the house, very common. I mean, nothing special about that. And I heard this voice, and the voice said, "I'm your higher self." And I went, "Well, shit." And my higher self was my spouse. I'm a messenger, and my message is not something that I contrived. It's something that I was taught and provided with, and essentially given the direction and authorization and instruction to provide the message to all who are interested.
Okay. Yeah. Let me ask you, I'd love to hear about the process of how you arrived at this place, but okay. I do love asking this question. When you were a kid in your deepest dreams and imaginations, did you ever think you'd be doing this right now?
No.
Okay. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
Oh, I'm sure I wanted to be a fireman or something to that, you know, traditional methodology in my childhood and my adult life until about my 50th year was very conventional. And my ambition, my orientation were as conventional as could be. And I experienced the same stresses and difficulties that probably 99% of the world's population does, as far as having a family and raising kids and developing a profession and so on and so forth. And I had a pre-incarnate agreement in order to provide a specific, fulfill a specific mission that wasn't destined, but it was highly probable. We're never given a sure thing. We're given the opportunity to fulfill a specific mission. And so fortunately, I had the appropriate awakening in order to allow me to fulfill that purpose.
Let me ask you a question. When you were in your conventional life, did it feel safe? Did it feel good?
It felt inadequate. And that is, that was always an underlying feeling. It's not something that I was particularly aware of, but it was always the feeling that there's something else that I'm supposed to be doing. But I had no idea what it was. And about my 50th year, I had an awakening. And that is something that we are all destined to have. When we have it is entirely up to us. We can have it when we're 17 or we can have it when we're 90. It doesn't matter when you have it, as long as you have it. And that is nothing more than the realization that all the stuff that you've been doing in your life may be providing you with what you perceive to be conventionally successful, but it's not making you happier. And when we have that awareness that we're not getting happier by what we're doing, that is a transformation, because we exist within a range of consciousness. And within this range of consciousness, we are tasked with becoming aware and then evolving to becoming awareness, which essentially is synonymous with becoming mindful. And that awareness is directional. We all have awareness. It's directional. And while we are living this life that I was describing as successful but not happy-making, my awareness, and everyone who goes through this process until they have an awakening, the awareness was pointed outside of me. In other words, I have to observe your reactions to me in order to attempt to modify my perception of self adequately to be more successful in tricking you into giving me more of what I like. And when we have this awakening, in order to have the awakening, you have to invert that awareness to be aware of what's going on inside of you, and it's not greater happiness. And it is incumbent upon us at that point to begin to explore ourselves and figure out what it is that we need to change, heal within us in order to allow us to fulfill our purpose, fulfill our mission, and to get that happiness that we all need. It's not a matter of just desiring it, it's a matter of need. And so by inwardly directing that awareness ever more deeply, ever more completely, we begin to not only fulfill our purpose, but we fulfill our mission in life. And that's when we begin to heal. And through that healing, happiness is the measure of how we're doing. And so if you're getting happier, then you are being successful in fulfilling your purpose and your mission, which are parallel, but not the same thing. And so that awareness is what allows us to do that healing and to accomplish our purpose and mission.
I thank you for that. A couple of things I wanted to just draw attention to. So interesting that you said, there were a couple of things you said that just kind of grabbed my attention. One is that, change and healing are necessary once we kind of orient ourselves to possibility and what could or might happen. And years ago, I didn't believe in this, but my friend was like, my best friend's a channeler in California, call her. And I called her because I was at my last wits. And one of the things she said to me that was fascinating and it stuck with me is she said, oh my goodness, you are wearing a dress and it's the most beautiful dress and it's covered in garnets and jewels and brocade. And it's just so gorgeous and layered. It's like armor and you're trying to dance in it and you can't. And she said, there's this vision of you as a child. How do you think a child would be able to move in that dress? And I said, not very well. And she said, oh, well, the jewels, the brocade, those are all the things, that people said to you, not to hurt you, to protect you. They told you, don't kiss boys on your first date. Hiding in the library is bad. And you just took them all on and you created this kind of protective garment and it's weighing you down. And she said, you're not going to be able to live into this life until you, this was like 15 to 18 years ago, until you start healing all of that and letting it go. And she said, it's going to be very painful. It's like, oh my gosh.
Well, it's painful. What she's describing and what you're describing is we're designed to create a false perception of ourselves. a hierophant or an identity or an ego, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same thing. But essentially what it is, it's a false perception of self, which is nothing more than a bundle of beliefs that we've either gotten by osmosis or we may have agreed to incorporate it into this identity. But that is our ego mind. That's what a mind is just a bundle of beliefs. And that becomes the filter that we use in order to process our experiences. While we maintain this identity, and as we began, it's our perception of self, that is what orients us to have this awareness focused outside of us. And so when we invert that awareness, then we realize incrementally the falseness of that identity. And we begin to expose our authentic self, which is always there. And as we begin to expose that authentic self, we become aware of the erroneous beliefs that we've incorporated into this identity that allow us to experience a lot of what we don't like so that we will know what we do like when we encounter it. If you understand it, if all we experience is what we like, we wouldn't know what we like because we have nothing to compare it to. And so the design is for us to experience a lot of what we don't like. So we'll have a resume of things we don't like, and we can begin to compare those when we awaken to things we do like, which are things like love and awareness and wisdom and inherent characteristics. And so we then are undergoing the process of healing, which is becoming aware of the beliefs that we've incorporated into this false perception of self, and we begin to throw them out. Say, well, that's stupid. Why do I keep that? It causes me stress. And why do I keep that one? Well, that one's perpetuating my stress. I need to get rid of that one. And so that is the process of healing. And through that process of surrendering the identity, the hierophant, we begin to be more familiar with our authentic self, which by its very nature is happiness and integrity and morality and ethical and all of those qualities that we deem to be valuable, but can't be trained. We can't be taught those and expect them to last while we maintain a false perception of self. But when we allow more of our authentic self, these are behavioral characteristics of our authentic self that begin to emerge, and they become who we are, not who we were taught to be.
Yes, absolutely. The other thing that captivated me was when you said, you said destiny, and, there are probabilities, and just because, maybe in this lifetime, before we even entered these bodies, we said, I'm going to do this. It doesn't mean that that's actually going to be what happens. I believe what you're saying is unless we put the healing in, unless we do the hard work, and unless we start making movements towards our destiny, it's not guaranteed. We've got to do the work.
Yeah. We always have choice. But and that is the nature of our experience, because it uniquely allows all aspects of a self to be explored, because we have that opportunity to choose to go right or to go left. And we go right and say, oh, no, that wasn't the right way. I'm going back the other way. And that, oh, no, that wasn't right. Okay, well, I'm in the middle now. So I'm through wandering around into the weeds on either side of the path, and you narrow your focus on the path. And the more you stay on the path, the more progress you make in your healing and so forth. But you have to agree to do that. And it's your choices that bring you back to that path.
Yeah, I think so many people struggle. And I know I did for years and years and years about, I grew up in an Islamic country. So I've seen many different forms of religion and reaching out to that mystery. But still, there were decades where I felt so alone and abandoned just in general, like by everybody. And there was just this profound sense of alienation. I was atheist at one point. And then, at times we're lucky that spirit or that energy that pervades this creation comes and kind of says, hey, wake up, stop. I don't know what you're doing over there in that, you know, whatever you're doing, but wake up, because there's some work that you have to do. You have to show up. You have to start showing up or start your path at the very least. Start your path. Mm-hmm. And they can be gentle reminders for some people. I've heard stories where it was just unequivocal and they just weren't given a choice. But mm-hmm. in the end, we all have to do hard work. We all have to show up. It can be profoundly confusing to try to figure out what we're supposed to do in this world. But I always feel like if you move in the direction of lifting other people up and whatever skill set you have, you're maybe heading in the right direction.
One of the primary decisions that we have to make in order to prepare to graduate from this range of consciousness is we have to choose whether we're going to polarize service to others or service to self. If we're choosing to serve a self path, then we're choosing to enhance this false perception of self to the nth degree. If we're choosing the service to others path, we're choosing to surrender this false perception of self and allow more of that authentic self to emerge. And we have to get to a point of adequate awareness that we can make that choice. If not, we're in relative chaos, vacillating back and forth. And so that's part of the importance of that awakening process, is getting enough awareness that we have potentially available under our command that we can make that choice so that we can follow one of those two paths.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you my second question, which is, did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like for you as a kid? And then how was your understanding of that energy or the cosmos, that connection? How has it evolved over time?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the evolution question. Huh? Well, I was raised by a single mom, and she, I wouldn't say was liberal, but she was non-restrictive. In other words, she was open to have serious and intellectual questions discussions about questions and topics and so forth. So even from an early age, that I had that opportunity to question. And as I got through playing around with those teenage years and got into my undergraduate studies, and I was initially had the ambition of going into pre-med, and I realized that I loved chemistry, but I didn't like biology. And if you don't like biology, medicine is tough. It's not something you should be doing. So I trotted over to the other side of the campus and discovered philosophy, and philosophy became my mainstay. But there's not a lot you can do with that from a economic standpoint once you graduate. But it did provide a significant basis of a capacity to use critical thinking. And that critical thinking has proven very valuable in all the stuff that I've been involved with, and provided the basis for me to successfully pursue that self-healing after I had the awakening too, as well as having the information that was available, you know, to the various philosophers over time. But that critical thinking has been essential to my path in fulfilling my purpose.
Yeah, I mean, I think I also grew up, you know, despite this mystical bent I now have, and what I feel that this reality is, you know, how, I don't know, just how communicative it is and responsive. You know, I grew up reading science magazines. I love science to the moon. I remember when my dad got me my first subscription to Discover mm-hmm. magazine when I was like 14 years old, and I just gobbled that. And then he got Science News for me. I was gobbling that stuff up. So I love science. I think it's such all the different ways to kind of figure out and understand everything that's going on around us. It's very exciting. Absolutely. But I never wanted to be a scientist. I kind of have been a leaf on the wind, blowing wherever I get blown. But also I growing up all over the world also makes me not like to be in one place.
Right.
For an extended period of time. I also know how beautiful this world can be, in all of its multiplicities. And I just want to commend you and honor you for, I don't know, so many people do not study what captivates them. They don't choose what interests them. They choose what will make them money.
Right.
And yeah. So I want to honor you for, you know, yes, you can't really go out and use philosophy to make a ton of money, but you honored that part of yourself. You know, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was essential. And that, you know, that was my bent. That's what I found exciting and interesting. And, you know, I, even as a young undergraduate, in challenging my professors, I had the blessing. I had one philosophy professor that actually lived down the street from me where I lived in undergraduate. And so I had the opportunity, and he was very welcoming, and I had the opportunity to sit on his front porch for many nights and just talking and discussing and things. And he was very patient, you know, and, you know, guided me those errant thoughts, you know, and helped me with that critical thinking. So, you know, philosophy is, it's nice to know what other people have concluded from the results of their work, but it's not conclusive. And understanding that there's virtually no conclusion in and of itself is a dramatic discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never over until it's over.
Right, right. Let me ask you, when you were an undergrad, what system of philosophy, you know, kind of interested you or spoke to you?
Well, you know, of course, the Greek philosophers were foundational, and so they were of interest. But, you know, what they evolved to was essentially the work of John Locke and David Hume, and particularly Immanuel Kant. And Immanuel Kant's conclusion of all of his work was that we can't know this world because we can only perceive it in thought. And he concluded also that there must be some sort of model that we follow, but that's not in and of itself the experience of the world. But the humanistic aspects of Locke's work and Hume's work really transformed Western population, and which we still ideally follow today. We have interference with that. But and you compare those to the works of the messages of Lao Tzu and the Buddha and Jesus and essentially, and you know, the Buddha 2,500 years ago gave us the same thing. You can't know this world. It's all pretend. And my own work, my own meditative work, and I had I've had that same knowledge, but I had the experience actually not too long ago, about probably 9 months ago. I went to a beach in on the Gulf of Mexico, and I had the opportunity. I was laying on the beach at night, and there was no one else around. You know, it was very quiet, but I could see out over the water, and I had a wonderful image of the Milky Way. You know, there weren't a lot of city lights. It was just the Milky Way in the darkness. And I had the realization that this is just like wallpaper. You can just peel the wallpaper off and all of this is gone. And I felt that, you know, I knew that intellectually, but I hadn't really felt that to that degree before. And having had that feeling, I said, oh, man, I've been fooling myself. And the whole world is just fooling itself. This is just pretend. But it's an important pretense because it provides us with the opportunity to explore, infinitely explore ourselves. And so it has inherent value, but it takes so much of the edge off of our feelings of anxiety and sense of accomplishment, necessity, and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I have to say the Milky Way is also absolutely gorgeous. It's just, if you, because I live in New Mexico, and so sometimes I house sit in the middle of nowhere where there are no lights around forever. And just having that experience of being able to actually see the Milky Way.
Right. And, the vastness of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. And how beautiful it is. But also, you know, I love the stories that humans kind of come up with to over the millennia to explain their, you know, their world, I guess you could say. Yeah. And so I always think of the Mayan cosmology and how the Milky Way is so integral and essential, and that it's a crocodile. And for them, they were like, don't you see the crocodile up there? I mean, there's the mouth, there's the tail, there's the body. And here's why the Milky Way is the way it is. Here's why the crocodile moves across the sky. And their cosmology around the Milky Way is just utterly exquisite. And so, you know, probably not reality, but gives us some insight into how the human mind works and how it tries to, I don't know. I just think humans can be capable of such beauty, and the stories that they create to understand things can also be incredibly beautiful. But I also am very whimsical. You need to know that. So if someone said to me, "Hey, look, do you see that crocodile up in the night sky?" I'd say, Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes. There's the crocodile. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out to me.
Yes. So you have to kind of play the game, whether you see it or not. Oh yeah, I see that. Yeah. Let's go back over here now.
Yeah, I also just want to point out, because I've been reflecting on this lately, the way that the greater world or society or culture benefits to keep us all in a fever dream of consumerism and distraction and fear and hope and lust and scarcity mindset. I mean, all of these things are just sometimes intoxicating fever dreams that keep us from doing that self-examination, that keep us from taking the positive action to heal, because we're always distracted. And it feels like it's worse now with phones and the internet and all of these things. I know my brain, I need to take a serious tech, like I need a diet, but I have to do this podcast, but I know that I need a diet. And I think, you know, it's almost like the greater energy in this universe is trying to get our attention so that we can move forward and heal and bring our gifts to the world. But if that happens on a wide scale, the powers that be that are earthbound, they will lose control over us. And that sounds so conspiracy theory. I know it does. I know. But it does feel like there is this real intentional desire by the powers that are here on this planet to keep us distracted.
Mm-hmm. And there is. That's an accurate assessment. This polarization that we were talking about, a service to self, a service to others, extends far beyond our range of consciousness. And you can go a long ways along that service to self and enhance that perception of separation, autonomous self perspective, but it becomes more and more narrow. In other words, you're more myopic of and needing to dominate and subjugate others in order to perpetuate your existence. And most of the prevailing hegemonies that limit our evolution, our enlightenment path progression, are predicated in beliefs that portion of our higher consciousness interactions have provided us with the intent and purpose of keeping us suppressed. Understand that we are we in the lower ranges of consciousness, which we most definitely are. We're in the most elementary level with enough awareness that we can assume responsibility for our progression. There is lower consciousness by two levels, but we're the elementary level that has the first capacity to assume responsibility for our evolution. And this energy that flows to us constantly is called intelligent energy. And we require it. It's provided by our higher selves, but it is a constant flow of energy that we have. When you're choosing to polarize service to self and enhance this false perception of self, you're choosing to isolate yourself from the higher self. So you still have to have this energy. But because you're isolating yourself and choosing to separate yourself from your higher self as well, you're also severing that source of energy. And so you have to get it from someplace else. Well, the only place that you can get it is from us, this third density range of consciousness that has enough energy to make it worthwhile for them to keep us suppressed and steal our energy. But we're not smart enough to know that we're not supposed to give it away. So we're the Goldilocks because we're such a fertile ground. And the Earth population has been a vital source of this energy for the service to self path, which requires domination and subjugation of us in order to keep us willing or unconsciously willing to surrender this energy to keep them alive. And greater awareness is what is required on our part in order to overcome that and surrender these false beliefs, these false perceptions of self, and assume responsibility, quit giving our energy away so that we have the energy the energy is like fuel for our awareness. So, you know, you got to have gas for that, make the car go. You got to have this energy and make the awareness go. And so we are, as a population, reaching essentially the minimum standards in order to have a major shift in the population. And theoretically, it works very similar to what they were arguing, the herd theory with the COVID. You know, if we got 60% or whatever it was, you know, of the population immune, then COVID would disappear because the herd theory would take, dominance over it. And that essentially is the same perception of if a certain percentage of the earthly population achieves a certain degree of awareness, that will filter over and pull, you know, the rest of the population higher as well. And so we're at that point, apparently. And so we're about to experience some significant changes and ability to interact with higher consciousness. And this year and the next year are going to be dramatic up through the 2030 because we have achieved that minimum level of a shift in the energy and the awareness of the general population. So, but yes, most of our unfortunate, dominant, and suppressing ideologies have been provided to us by this service to self faction that was needing to keep us in the lower echelons of consciousness and unaware.
Yeah. It's actually just going about my life and talking to people or witnessing things online or witnessing interactions with other people, just in my general life. There is just, and rightfully so, but one of the things that I have, besides for witnessing how angry everybody is now, I feel like there's this layer of anger that's just out in the world, not all focused on the same thing, but people just seem to be generally angry. There is so much fear and terror about death in that transition. And I think that fear and terror around you know, that event that none of us can get out of in this life is what motivates so many people to lash out or get angry or hurt others. Because people just don't want to think about death. They don't want to die. And they think, I don't know what everybody thinks, because that's just a generalized statement. But based on your work, based on what you've learned, for you, what does death mean?
Well, we take off the suit of clothes that we're currently wearing and we go on. We just change clothes. We are an analog projection of our metaphysical self. Our metaphysical self is actually what is in the process of evolving. And it is a consciousness pattern that we have created by virtue of multitudes of incarnations. And if you imagine, just imagine that we're on a sports team and we practice all week long. We learn the plays, we watch game films, we get coaching and all of that stuff. And then we have a game on Friday night. Well, we're in the game on Friday night right now when we're supposed to try to remember all the stuff that we were coached on and we learned the week before. And then when the game is over, we'll go back, we'll integrate, merge with our metaphysical self, and we'll go back to the locker room. And we look game films again and, you know, learn what we did. Well, I was going to do this, but I forgot to do that and all this, that, and the other. And then we have another game. And the average human on Earth has had over 3,000 incarnations by this point, and some as many as 8,000. We have different functions. People that incarnate and die as an infant or die as a child, planned on a short lifetime. And they were actually the teachers for their parents and for all the people that may have worked, you know, with them to try to save them. And they were the teachers of providing them with an experience that would allow them to become more aware of themselves and heal themselves. So it was a gift. And the two people that were killed in Minneapolis, Alex Pretty and Good, I forgot her first name.
Renee.
But anyway, they had a pre-incarnate agreement that that would be a service that they would use, that they would essentially be martyrs in order to motivate the population to overcome the service to self infringement upon the general population. And so that's how we instruct each other. And understand that what we're learning, in addition to awareness, we're learning sympathy and compassion, which are predicates to learn love, which we will do in the next range of consciousness. So what we perceive to be victims of an experience are actually the teachers, because we're providing the perpetrators in a particular experience to have the opportunity to become aware and develop initially that sympathy and eventually the compassion in preparation for their advancement to the next range of consciousness. And so every experience that we have is a subject-object relationship. The object is always the teacher. The subject is always the student. But we interchange, as you and I are having an exchange right now, we're flip-flopping that role. In one moment, I may be the subject and you may be the object, and we'll swap that and vice versa. So every experience that we have is an opportunity that brings us a message that we're supposed to learn about ourselves. The female is always the object. The male is always the subject, but that's not to say that that's only the object or subject role. As we're talking about, we're flip-flopping that role of subject-object. But what a female's most concerned with, family and children and love, and those aspects are predicates for us exploring love and developing our awareness. As a rule, women are much more aware than men are of being in the moment. And so the male is always the subject, with ultimate for the course of the lifetime to learn. But we incarnate as male, we incarnate as female, and it's supposed to be roughly 50-50. Someone who experiences an attraction to their own gender, and a male in whatever context that, you know, in today's social defines, is an indication that they didn't, that person, that spirit didn't incarnate in equal quantities. If you incarnate as a female for, say, 65-75% of your time, then you're going to feel more comfortable in being in female company. And so that's your attraction. We perceive it to be sexual, but it's not sexual in the spiritual sense because we're not physical. But that is the attraction for gay, both male or female, you know, and vice, the same is true for the male. You know, if you incarnate in 80% as male and you have the choice, if you don't get that experience as being male and female, then you're going to be probably oriented towards, you know, being gay in an incarnation until you find that balance, you know, between that subconscious attraction to one or the other. But that notwithstanding, even being gay is providing with you a diversity of experience that aids in your evolutionary advancement, because we're learning about awareness and the sympathy and compassion for others, and all of which is a predicate to begin to dissolve our perceptions of separation that eventually we will give up that perception of separation and finish our evolution to realize that we're all one.
Yes, thank you. So eloquently put. I, you know, just from my own life, I remember years ago, 20 years ago, maybe, I was in a grocery store in Portland, Oregon, and it was just mobbed. It was so mobbed. And I was starting to get a little stressed out by how busy it was. And I was kind of trying to zone out. And all of a sudden, this voice or this thought came into me that said, "Oh my gosh, I hate being among the common people." And I looked around and I thought, where did that come from? I mean, Literally, where did that come from? Because that is the weirdest, what just happened? And then I think a few months later, I went to see this astrologer / tarot person. And they said, oh, it's saying here that in your last life, you were in a cave in India, and all you did was meditate all day. And that was your lifetime. And I thought, oh my God, that totally makes sense with what I thought in the store. I mean, I had no concept or clue of previous lives at that point, but that was a moment where the dots connected. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
So weird. Yeah. I thought I said,
that was probably one of those game films that you watch in practice. You say, I'm going to remember that. I'm when I incarnate next, that's going to be definitely something that I remember.
God. Oh my gosh. I was like, suddenly I've become a snob.
Well, the Buddha cautioned us about over associating with those that are a lesser consciousness than we are, because we restrict ourselves and understand that we learn, we advance by observing others that we perceive to be happier than we are. And whatever level that you are in your consciousness development, there is always a model available to you. And someone in a very low consciousness is not going to be able to observe someone in a significantly higher consciousness and receive benefit from that. So it's an incremental process. And so from whatever level that you are able to observe that in someone else, that greater happiness will be your model until you mimic them enough that you become them, and then you search for another higher model, and we incrementally follow that path until we are able to follow the highest and achieve that level of development ourselves. But we learn, and it's a stair-step process, and so the Buddha was very specific in his direction. Just be careful who you associate with, because you need models, and you are in the process individually. He was obviously a different model, because he was so far above of everybody else that he was a teacher. He was a messenger, and his message was applicable to all ranges of consciousness.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. That's super helpful for me. Yeah. Let me ask you the main question of the podcast. I would so appreciate if you would, you know, this show is about experienced magic and miracles. I'd love it if you'd share a story. It could be more than one story where you feel like you've either witnessed or experienced something that was magical or miraculous. Maybe mysterious too. Who knows?
Well, I'll preface this by saying that my spouse, for a period of time, I had a spouse for a period of time, and she died after about 11 years that we were together. And after she died, I was very morose. And actually, 2 days after she died, and I was taking the garbage out, and I was coming back into the house, very common. I mean, nothing special about that. And I heard this voice, and the voice said, "I'm your higher self." And I went, "Well, shit." And my higher self was my spouse. And while we were together, she developed a significant talent for talking to her higher self. And before she died, about 6 months before she died, I had in meditation a visitation from her higher self and from her, but I didn't know it was her. And her higher self presented, I could see them, and she held my left hand, and my higher self, that it was my spouse at the time, held my right hand, but she was behind me. I couldn't see her. And their physical presence was, if you ever saw the movie Cocoon, okay, yes. And you remember the spirit image when they took the facade off and they were just light? Yeah. Well, that was the image that was presented to me. You know, that's what they looked like. And that was just for my purposes. But I couldn't tell you whether they were with me for 3 days or 30 minutes. It was so overwhelming. And so and I was just shaking. I was just vibrating, you know, with this high energy. And it took me about 30 minutes after I finished the meditation, after they departed and I finished the meditation, before I could stand up, because I was just, you know, my body was just that was a precursor to let me know that I didn't know at the time that she was going to die, but you know, that was just preparing me for that and preparing me for doing what I'm doing now. And then, you know, when she did die and I got that, well, yeah, of course, you know, you're my higher self. So, and we talk daily, and that's the source of my information. And we just have an ongoing, and then we went through a long period of self-healing, and she was my guide for my self-healing. And in the course of self-healing, I was learning about myself, obviously, and learning a lot of things about creation and what we're here for and all that kind of stuff. But she's still my source of information. She's my teacher, and I'm just here doing what I can do. But yeah, that experience was monumental for me, and just got a peek behind the curtain of what it's like over on the other side.
There you go. You're using that verbiage, peek behind the curtain, because I was literally just thinking of this dream that I had, which my listeners are probably sick about hearing about at this point, but it's quick. It's quick. Where this happened years ago and it completely upended my entire life and really wrecked me for a few years. It was not emotionally okay, but I was, floating out in space, looking at the universe, and it was so beautiful. And I was marveling at its beauty. And there was the background hum. I felt really held, even though I was floating in space. And I was just saying to myself, my God, this is gorgeous. And this figure came on and looked at me and said, "Oh, you think this is real? This is what's real." And went down to the bottom of the universe and pulled a curtain back and then showed me what was behind it. And it was so, it's a noetic experience. You can't explain it. It's just, you know, I try to tell people and I'm like, you just don't, it's like beyond words, but it was a revelation. I woke up the next day and the energy was in my room. The entire room was suffused with it. Needless to say, I felt great that day. I was like, wow. The only thing I can say is that it was love, but it was beyond love. But then I started a whole period of life where I was like, I don't know why I'm here. I'd rather be there. Like nothing about this, you know? And so it was about 2 years where I had pretty profound depression and was really screwed up. Really,
really,
really screwed up. I was so angry. I was so angry at being shown that. I was so resentful. I was just, I mean, beside myself. I was so angry until finally I saw this acupuncturist, you know, who did Tweena and so could feel things in my body just by touching it. He was so talented. And he said, okay, there's something going on here that you need to tell me about. And I told him, and I said, you know, I want to be there. And he said, all right, okay, this is what we're going to work on. Cause this is like, you're carrying this and it's in your body. And we're just going to do the work that makes you want to stay, because obviously you're here to do something. You don't know what it is right now, but we've got to change this whole story for you. And so that's when I saw him every week and he changed my life and he saved me and he helped me. I'm still, you know, a brat. I'm still grumpy when I am like tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, you should do this or whatever. I mean, I always make a joke that they like me because I complain a lot. And they're like, that one over there is a huge whiner. Okay. We like her fighting spirit. And at this point, it's just this dance we go through where I complain for a while and they all shake their heads and say, we know you're going to do it. Just, you can skip the whining part. Just go and do it. But I'm kind of addicted to the whining at this point.
Well, it's all right. It's behavior. But what is anger? Why do we get angry? Why does anybody get angry?
I felt betrayed. I felt really betrayed by the fact that I was quote unquote given this vision. And I didn't want it because I didn't want to wake up yet. I wanted to still like live in the fever dream, I guess you could say. I mean, I guess once I had that dream, I knew that I could never ignore the reality anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Any time that we experience anything that we don't like, that is stress. And stress is a spectrum ranging from the most minor to the most severe. Anything in between is stress. Stress is a message to us of what we need to become aware of inside of us, those beliefs that we talked about earlier that we incorporated into our identity. What we're supposed to do is become aware of the belief, yeah, that's causing me stress, so I don't need that belief anymore, and throw it out. When we get angry, as we've experienced stress, which is something that has challenged the authenticity of our self-perception. But we don't want to change. And so I want to get angry at the experience to make the experience go away so I don't have to change. So I've been given the gift of awareness of what I need to heal, but I'm not going to do that. I resent that. So I'm going to get angry with you to make you go away so I don't have to change.
Yep.
Darn.
Hey
everyone. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dean and everything that he had to say. I think it's important to understand that we live in a dynamic universe filled with energies and beings and creations that we can only begin to guess at. And the most interesting thing we can do with our lives is to explore those reaches, explore those mysterious places, and then figure out how we can work with them to make this world a more beautiful place. If you want to do a deeper dive on Dean and what he's doing in the world, check out all the links in the episode show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm so grateful that you take the time to download this podcast, to listen, and hear a little bit more about what goes on behind the curtain of our universe. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Dean. I mean, mystery, magic, mayhem, amazingness can happen at any time of life. So just because you're 50, just because you're 60, just because you're 12, doesn't mean that that mysterious energy, that thing that just enlivens this universe, isn't going to stop by and offer you an opportunity. So keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and be ready to partner with that which is divine.